Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is J.P. Miller, the founder and publisher of Empire Report, the go-to place if you want to know anything about New York. He's an online aggregator of New York State political news. You can find more at www.empirereportnewyork. That's one word, www.empirereportnewyork.com. JP, welcome, and I'm delighted you could find the time to meet with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Alan.
So you watch the state news every day. I mean, to me, it's all about Trump. He sucked the wind out of everybody's sails. And yet, we have the most astounding situation here. Let me pontificate for one moment. We've got a governor who's running for office. His top aides have been convicted. One took a plea, the other's been convicted of three serious felony counts, grafting, bribery. People have come forward, like Cynthia Nixon is going to run against them in a primary. We have Stephanie Miner, former mayor of Syracuse, coming forward to run against them on a separate line. And yet the polls are all saying that Cuomo's going to win and win big.
Well, the polls do say that Cuomo is going to win and win big, and he is a brand name in New York. I think there's a large portion of the electorate that doesn't read the newspaper every day about the corruption trials. I think people that pay attention very closely to politics see him as a vulnerable guy. But Governor Cuomo is no doubt very, very prohibitively favored to win re-election. But you say Trump takes up all the oxygen. We have such an exciting news landscape in New York. We have our senior senator, Chuck Schumer, as the majority leader in the U.S. Senate. We have Kirsten Gillibrand as a very likely candidate for president in 2020, along with Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio. So it is a great time for news in New York. And while the corruption trials are going on for Governor Cuomo, I think a lot of New York news consumers and citizens see a lot of corruption in their newspapers for the last 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And I think the electorate is in some way desensitized to seeing corruption stories about their elected officials. They think it's baked in and think most politicians or many politicians are corrupt to some extent.
I think to some degree you're right. These people like Cynthia Nixon is a progressive. Cuomo is moving as fast as his legs will carry him to the left. And all of this is complicated because we had a congressional election in Queens that has a lot of people paying attention to how wrong the pollsters can be.
Yeah, so that was a blockbuster on primary night. On primary night, I was sitting there watching the returns, and the big story was supposed to be, you know, convicted felon Michael Grimm was going to beat Dan Donovan. That didn't happen, and this Crowley thing, Crowley was very close to being the next Speaker of the House. He is a super nice guy, too, if you've ever met him. And this Ocasio-Cortez election was a shell shock to New York politics. In my opinion, it was something where Joe Crowley got caught flat-footed. He could have beaten her. He had the resources. He has the team. He could have beaten her if he took that election seriously.
Apparently, he waited too long. And then when he got the idea that this could be dangerous, he was behind.
Right. So that election, so a lot of people say, well, the election of Ocasio-Cortez is a bad thing for Cuomo. He can now get beaten by Cynthia Nixon. I look at it in a little bit of a different way, where this is a big warning shot to Cuomo. So now he says, well, I'm not going to get caught flat-footed. I'm going to spend the resources. I'm going to get my team together. I'm going to get boots on the ground, and I'm going to count votes so that I don't have to worry about Cynthia Nixon. I don't think that he trusts the polls. He knows that Zephyr Teachout had a great showing against him 4 years ago, and Zephyr Teachout did not have the media coverage that Cynthia Nixon is generating. Zephyr Teachout did not have the funding that Cynthia Nixon's going to have, and she just isn't an A-list celebrity like Cynthia Nixon. So the big question, can Cynthia Nixon outperform what Zephyr Teachout did? A lot of people think she can, and I don't think Governor Cuomo is any more taking this primary for granted. I think he's going to gear up, and you're right, Alan. He is going to the left on every major issue. While he's tried to govern as a moderate over the last 7 years, he is going hard left on every single issue, trying to get people to believe that he is the best champion for them in this Trump era.
And yet, people who know Andrew Cuomo quite frequently, you know him to be a tough guy, a bit of a bully, a person who pushes other people around and doesn't always make the best choices, as we say to our grandson, make the right choices. He messes up. And there's a whole history. Now, the question is whether the opposition, Mark Molinaro running against him or others, can make something out of that. I mean, I could see an ad on TV doing things like bringing up all of his missteps. Number one, having him up there braying into the wind that he was going to clean up Albany. Then abolishing the Moreland Act Commission and saying, it's my commission, I can do anything I want with it. That's the commission, for those of you who may just be entering the room, that was supposed to, you know, stop criminal activity. Then his guys getting convicted, one taking a plea, and one Prococo being found guilty in a trial of three corruption charges. I mean, I think if this was run right, because people don't pay attention to politics until Labor Day, that there could be some real trouble here.
Alan, you're 100% right that there could be some excellent negative television commercials drafted against Governor Cuomo. The big thing, though, is that the candidates, Stephanie Miner, Marcus Molinaro, and so far Cynthia Nixon, don't have the resources to pay for those TV ads. Broadcast television in New York City and Albany and Buffalo is extremely expensive. Governor Cuomo has a stockpile of over $30 million, and people think it may get up to $33 or $34 or $35 million after the next filing period. His opponents simply do not have the resources to compete. Governor Cuomo is going to have really nice positive ads on all the positive things that have happened in New York over the last 7 years. And while Marcus Molinaro and Stephanie Miner are both really great qualified candidates who should get a fair shake against Governor Cuomo, I think that with the electorate not paying attention to politics in the governor's race as much as they should, I see if he gets past Cynthia Nixon for the primary, which is not a given, but if he does, I think he probably has a very clear shot to reelection.
And when we're talking about Cynthia Nixon, I want to tell you something that's really bugging me. It's something called the Working Families Party. The rank and file on the Working Families Party made it clear that they wanted Cynthia Nixon to be their progressive candidate. The union guys, who have so much of the money in the game, did not, but the rank and file won out. Now, there's a lot of talk that if Cynthia Nixon loses the primary, the Democratic primary, that the bosses of the Working Families Party are going to insist that she get off that ballot and deprive people of the right to vote for her.
That is the million-dollar question, Alan, and it's unclear to me how they take her off the working families line. Does she need to agree to get taken off that line?
Yeah, I think she does.
Well, so is she going to agree? If Cuomo beats her 51% to 49%, is she going to agree to get taken off? Cynthia Nixon, if she makes a good showing, let's say she loses slightly, she can make a good case saying, well, in a four-way primary, Molinaro is going to take votes away from Cuomo. Stephanie Miner will take votes away from Cuomo, and I can slide in and win the governor's race. So I don't see her, as much as I read about her, she grew up in a poor single mother situation. She paid her way through college. She is a real force to be reckoned with. I don't see her, after barely getting beat by Cuomo, if that happens, just riding away into the sunset and saying, okay, everybody vote for Andrew Cuomo. The other thing is everybody's asking, okay, Cynthia, if you lose to Andrew Cuomo, are you going to run in November? Well, no one's asking Andrew Cuomo, well, what happens, Governor Cuomo, if you lose to Cynthia Nixon? Are you going to run in November? Or are you going to agree to abide by the primary? And I'm not saying she's going to win, but Cynthia Nixon has a much better chance of winning this primary than a lot of people in the press are giving her credit for. I'm not saying she's going to win, but she does have a chance.
No, I think you make great sense. I want to talk to you about the so-called Janus case. It's had a major impact on unions. The Supreme Court clearly was out to really kill unions by saying that they could not represent people who didn't want to give them any money, and they couldn't take money out of their salaries to do that. And now New York is going to stop deducting union fees from non-members' paychecks following this so-called Janus decision of the Supreme Court. Will this kill the unions in New York State?
Well, New York is the home of unions. This is the union capital of the United States. There are more union members in New York than anywhere else in the country. While this was certainly a blow to the unions and a negative occurrence for the unions, I don't see it killing the unions in New York. The unions are one of the most powerful social and political forces in the state. They generate hundreds of millions of dollars a year from dues. They will continue to do that. And in the backup of not collecting dues, there are other ways that they can collect funds. So no, I don't see this as a stake in the heart of the unions. The unions will continue to be a huge force and a huge impactor of both state, county, federal, local governments in New York. While this was a negative thing for them, it's not their demise by a long shot.
Well, they can't be happy because they're going to lose a lot of money, you know, as a result of it, JP. So now a lot of people are looking at some of the congressional races. And one of the congressional races, which is a lot of people's attention, is the 19th Congressional District, where John Faso has come to sort of represent the face of people that the liberal community wants to defeat, only it ain't going to be so easy.
Right. So New York 19, if you talk to people in both in Washington and both the Democratic and the Republican parties, New York 19, they look at Faso as the most vulnerable incumbent Republican in the state of New York. And there are a number of vulnerable incumbent Republicans, but people say Faso is the most vulnerable. That is because his district went for Obama by 6 percentage points. And it also went for Donald Trump by 6 percentage points. So it is a true swing district.
A purple district.
Yes, yes, a true purple district. And there were, I think, 6 candidates trying to become the Democratic nominee. They spent millions of dollars doing it. The nominee for the Democratic Party is going to be Antonio Delgado.
Does he look like the right person to oppose conservative Faso?
Well, one thing I'll say about Faso is Faso has been around the block. He is a good politician. He knows how to do the blocking and tackling of politics. He's going to raise a lot of money. He's going to put together a good team. He's going to be on message. He's not going to make any unforced errors. So he is going to do as good a job as a Republican can do in this environment. Antonio Delgado, I've been seeing his television commercials on my television screen for the past 3 months. He seems like a really qualified messenger of the Democratic message of we need to oppose Trump, we need to be a check and balance in Congress against the president. And so I think Antonio Delgado is going to give him a really good race and run. I don't know who's favored, but it will be very, very competitive. There will be millions of dollars in outside money poured into this race.
And then in the 21st district, we have Elise Stefanik, who at one point I think was the youngest woman in Congress and elected. She has drawn herself an opponent, but people are less expectational of her losing in the 21st than Faso, who is facing a real fight. Tough fight.
Yes, Stefanik has a much more favorable district. I've talked to people that have seen poll numbers where Trump's numbers have gone up over the last 6 months in Stefanik's district, where those numbers have not gone up in Faso's district. Tedra Cobb, who is the nominee against Stefanik, seems like a very good candidate. She also came out of a competitive primary. She faced Dylan Radigan, who was a MSNBC contributor for a long time. So she's a very impressive candidate in her own right, but people look at Stefanik's district as more safe. Of course, if it's a big blue wave, you could wipe out 5 or 6 Republican congressmen if it's a big blue wave in November. I would say it has more to do with Trump's approval rating. And is Trump's approval rating down in the 30s? Has he screwed up on a bunch of easy things in November? Or is his support kind of firming up as it has been over the last couple of months. But if it's a big blue wave, you could certainly see Stefanik and John Katko in Syracuse and Lee Zeldin down in Long Island have a tough race. But if not, Faso seems to be the one that people are focused on.
My favorite politician in New York State is Comptroller DiNapoli. He's saying now, and I'm sure that the governor is not happy with him for saying it, that the state has a looming deficit coming on. We know that Cuomo was not nice to DiNapoli for years, and it was really a rather disgusting show of bullyism, I think. Nevertheless, DiNapoli's got to have a lot of guts to get in the governor's face at a time like this, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm impressed that DiNapoli's doing this, and yes, he has battled to some extent with Cuomo.
But Cuomo's almost always the instigator.
Yes, yes. And I also am someone who I would consider myself somewhat of a fan of Tom DiNapoli. He seems to be like a very straight-shooting politician. He does his homework, puts out the facts, and then lets others analyze those facts.
Okay, we have a lightning round here, JP. And so let me start with a real, because we only have about 6 minutes to go. Are we going to see recreational marijuana in New York State?
Yes, 100%.
Because the governor is for it. He used to be against it.
It is something that with Massachusetts, it's going to have recreational marijuana. Vermont's going to have recreational marijuana. With those two states allowing recreational marijuana, it makes no sense to have New York have it be illegal. Now, my opinion is it's going to be tough to go from having illegal marijuana to having marijuana available on every street corner. There's going to be a lot of negative consequences to that. And having it become more mainstream, I don't necessarily agree with it. I think that New York would be smart to decriminalize marijuana. Whereas we're not going to send people to jail for it, but if you're caught with smoking a joint or with some marijuana, you get a traffic ticket rather than being sent to jail.
I don't know, JP, in my hometown, my little perfect hometown of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, I can tell you that three people have asked to open marijuana stores in the town, and in throughout Massachusetts you're finding this. I agree with you. I don't see how New York stays behind.
So yes, I think it'll become legal and recreational use within the next 3 or 4 years.
Okay. And then I want to talk to you about the New York City subways. If there's one thing that could put Cuomo off the rails, it's the subways. Now you may remember that when the Second Avenue subway, which ain't much of a subway, it doesn't go that far.
It's not much of a subway. It costs $100 billion to build.
Yeah, and it's four stops.
No, it's
but
a joke.
But he stood up there braying like sort of a, that's right, braying like a mule, and dumped his chest, and he said, I'm in charge of the subways. This is a direct shot at the mayor of New York, who many people think runs the subways. Well, now he's got the credit for it. He said, I did this, I made this subway. And then all hell broke loose on the subways. You know, the repairs are terrible. People are stranded. People in Brooklyn, their subway line is closing down. And then they bring in this guy. And the question is, can he do what he needs to do? Can he make it better in time for this election? I doubt it. This is Andy Byford.
Well, Andy, there's a blockbuster story that has Andy Byford, who was appointed in January or February, says that he can't get a meeting with Governor Cuomo and he can't get a meeting with Mayor de Blasio. This is the guy that's in charge of running the subways. Mm-hmm. And so while Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio love to get headlines about they're the ones that are helping to fix the subway, or it's his fault, it's a blockbuster story that Andy Byford can't get a meeting with Governor Cuomo or Mayor de Blasio. Mayor de Blasio's office came out after that article came out. About an hour later, Mayor de Blasio's press secretary came out and said, oh, we're meeting with him on July 10th. He's been talking to a lot of people in our administration. But the subways are an issue, and I'm someone who's ridden the subways a lot. The subways in Manhattan run great, in my opinion.
Sure.
When you get to the outer boroughs, where there are people that aren't as affluent as the Manhattanites, that's where the subways are really bad. And in the summer, when you get a bad subway and maybe the air conditioning's off, that's when people really get upset. And it could be a long, hot summer for both Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio if there are subway problems.
So JP Miller, the head of Empire Reports, let me ask you this. It is clear that the president of the United States is trying to do away with the right for a woman to make a choice about abortion. Will that affect New York State?
I'm not a constitutional expert. I also look at Donald Trump. He may tell people that he's against abortion, but I have to imagine that him in the first 65 years of his life, or 70 years of his life before he became president, was more of a pro-choice guy. This is not a religious zealot, but he certainly wants to appeal to his base and appoint someone to the Supreme Court who will not be in favor of Roe versus Wade. But I imagine that New York, I don't see this as being an issue, but they see it, you know, if it happens in any state, it's a big deal. It's
but
a sea change.
I was here when by one vote, they passed legislation that would permit abortion. And New York, of course, has been the leader here. So do you think, and there's been a big movement to try to push the state into being even more protective of that.
Yes, I could see that happening. And I believe that a lot of Republicans, even in the state legislature, are pro-choice.
So in the end, the election is looming upon us. The big fight is over the state Senate. We only have a second or two, but in the end, does the Senate go Democratic finally?
I have to imagine that in 2018, with how unpopular Donald Trump is in New York State, that the Senate, which I believe is only holding on by one vote, that it will go Democratic next year. That's what I would imagine. Would you imagine that, Alan?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that there's a very good chance the Democrats will take the Senate in New York. However, they've tried before and failed miserably. And it's often said that you can equate a circular firing squad with the Democrats in the New York State Senate. So anyway, we've been with J.P. Miller, our wonderful friend, the founder and publisher of Empire Report, NewYork.com. Again, the publisher of Empire Report, NewYork.com. And we love having you here, J.P. You're always the man of the hour because you're up on everything. Thanks, J.P., for all you do to keep us informed.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.